Welcome to the Docs Who Lift podcast, where we distill and simplify the complexities of a healthy lifestyle, exercise, medicine, and weight loss. We're excited to bring you a podcast that's a prescription for clinical practice, scientific recommendations, and just real life. This is the Docs Who Lift podcast.
Hey, welcome back to the Docs Who Lift podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Spencer Nadolski, and my co-host, Dr. Carl Nadolski, Jr.
Yeah, hi, hi.
Today, we have a special guest with us, Dr. Enomotin. He is from 23andMe. He's a geneticist, and they just published a really cool paper looking at kind of genetic predictors of GLP-1 receptor agonists in the weight loss and their side effects, something we've been talking about, like, how do we predict weight loss? You know, we can look at some of these phenotypical types of differences, like, you know, socioeconomic, body size, sex differences. But like, we
not
think
having diabetes yet,
yeah,
sort of thing.
We're like, there's got to be something with genetics, especially with the receptor and how and their sensitivity, maybe. So, Dr. Adam, thanks for coming on to the podcast to discuss this brand new paper that just came out.
Thanks so much for having me. Excited to talk about it.
Yeah. So, okay. So you've been working at 23andMe, you said before the podcast, like 10 years. What got you guys getting, I suppose what got you guys interested in this is because everybody's using these medicines and you guys got a huge database of people, with their genetics and people using the medicines. But yeah, tell a little bit of background around this.
Yeah. I think like you absolutely hit on some of the things there. So, you know, GLP-1s are transforming society, right? They're really changing the way that people think about weight loss and weight loss management. And just the uptake of these medications has been truly tremendous. And so at 23andMe, we're always interested in research that can help people make decisions about their health, be it by understanding, you know, what diseases they may be at risk for, or even beyond that, thinking about what treatments might be best tailored towards them. So trying to imagine a world where we're getting closer towards precision medicine. And with GLP-1s, I think it's very interesting, right? We know from just things that people have written and just things that are in the public consciousness now that there's actually a great amount of variation in terms of how people respond to these drugs, right? So for some people, they can be really transformative. You know, they might lose 25% of their body weight and they don't have any side effects and they can change their lives. And then for other people, it can be a much more negative experience, right? They might not lose much money. They may have spent quite a lot of money on these medications. They may experience some quite unpleasant side effects. You know, there's a lot of side effects such as nausea and vomiting associated with these. And so given the research cohort that we have, we were very interested in asking the question of, well, does genetics play a role in some of that variation? And through this study, we were actually able to give some of the answers to that question.
Very cool. How'd you guys set it up? It looks like you looked at like over 27,000 people that would they self-report that they're on one of these medicines or something?
Yeah. So, I mean, as people may know, 23andMe is a direct consumer genetic testing company. We've been around for a very, very long time. And we have over 11 million people who have both purchased a 23andMe kit and have chosen to participate in research. And that's an entirely voluntary thing. People can choose to participate in research or not, and it's entirely by choice. There's no sort of incentive to do so. But we found actually about 80% of our customers want to participate in research, and we ask them to complete surveys that will tell us things about their health status. So, you know, what diseases have they been diagnosed with, a bit about their lifestyle, and people come back and give more information. And so in this case, when we wanted to study GLP-1s, we launched a survey probably about a year and a half ago, where we were asking people, you know, what medications are you taking? What dosage of medication are you taking? How long have you been on that medication? And, you know, what effects have you experienced? So how much weight have you lost? And have you experienced any side effects? And so using that information, that was kind of where we started collecting the data, and then we're interested in comparing that to the genetics that we had got from the genetic testing kit.
Very cool. So what, and how do you guys, actually, this is a good question, because I've gotten the 23andMe, and then there's always new little things that come out like, hey, did you know you have this risk factor or whatever? So how do you find new things? You don't look at everything at once, so then you just like check.
I don't even know how it works. You're the geneticist.
Yeah, you don't know what the hell you're
please
talking about.
Please tell, because that's I have no idea. Sure.
Yes.
So the way this works is, so if you're studying a disease, for example, right? So you might have collected information from a lot of people who have told you that they've been diagnosed with a particular disease. And what you want to do is you want to compare their genome to lots of people who have told you that they haven't had a disease. And what you're doing is that you're looking at millions of genetic variants in the genome. You're looking at them one at a time, and you're asking, does this genetic variant appear to be more common in this disease or not? And what you find is, if you sort of scan across the whole genome, you'll find certain genetic variants that have like really strong evidence of being linked to that particular disease. And you can then use that information. You can kind of combine those genetic effects to try and make predictions for like the next genome you get. Is this genome likely to be more predisposed towards this disease or not?
So I guess the question is, so like when I did my 23andMe, however many years ago, did you look at my GLP-1 receptor? Did you have all that information, or how does that?
So when you do the genetic test, you know, we look at about 600,000 places in the genome where there's sort of no genetic variants. And so we measure those. And if you've consented for research, we'll have that in our database, and we'll be comparing that to the information you may have told us about your disease status. But it won't be looking at like your genome in particular. What we'll be doing is aggregating that with many, many, many other individuals to try and do this, to answer this question of like, is this genetic variant more common or not in this particular group?
Very cool. Okay. So then, all right, tell us what you guys did here, because yeah, I love the looking at the GLP-1 receptor and everything. So
in this case, it was quite nice. So taking that approach of like looking across the whole genome and saying, are any of these genetic variants associated? What we found when we did that study is it was very, very clear what was jumping out. So the first signal that we found was actually there's a genetic variant in the GLP-1 receptor that seems to be associated with the efficacy of these medications. And so as soon as we saw that, we kind of knew we were going to be on the right track, because the GLP-1 receptor is the target of the medication. So when you see something like that, you're like, aha, the system works, the science all makes sense. And what we found is that this genetic variant, it seems to change the efficiency at which the receptor is being expressed on the cell. And so it's changing the amount of the drug target that is available and how the drug is then processed in the body. And what's fun about it is that this same genetic variant seems to modulate both efficacy and your risk for side effects. So it looks like if you have the genetic variant that appears to increase the efficacy, it also increases the risk for side effects, which is quite fun, because when I speak to clinicians like yourselves, they say, aha, one of the signatures of is the GLP-1 medication working is actually experiencing side effects like
you're sensitive. However, in all the studies that we're familiar with, it's not actually like, say, nausea, because a lot of people used to say, well, if people are nauseous, then of course they're going to lose weight because they're not eating as much. But all the studies show that those don't actually correlate to the weight loss. So people who don't get side effects do just as well, though.
I think it's a complicated picture.
Yeah. Right?
I think the biology is, I think that, yes, if the drug is working, you may be experiencing some of these side effects, but it's tied into how well are people going to adhere to these medications, right? If you're having a really bad time on these medications, you may discontinue the medication.
Well, and the good doctors will go slower, because they're like, wow, you're responding so well. So like, let's not go up in your dose. I wonder if that's playing a role here. That's really interesting.
Yeah. So I guess my question is, so how did you figure that part out first? And then how did you get the 28,000 patients who apparently reported that they're on the medications, right?
Oh, well, we started with just asking people in a survey, right? Like, okay, have you taken a GLP-1 medication?
And okay, like,
if they had, then we'd go from there. So we collected all of the data before we started looking at the genetics.
Gotcha. Okay. And then you differentiated, I'm sure, which ones they're on and, you know, and if they're taking it for type 2 diabetes or other indications versus if they don't have type 2 diabetes, obviously, because I know that's in the paper, but.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And, you know, one of the interesting things we find is we actually find a slight difference in the genetics depending on which medication you're taking. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, that'll be interesting to hear. I want to hear that stuff.
Mm. And as I'm sure, like, your listeners know, it's like there's these two classes, right? There's the semaglutide, which is like the Ozempic of the world. And then there's another one called tirzepatide, which is the Mounjaros of the world. And they're slightly different in that, well, while they both target the GLP-1 receptor, the tirzepatide class also targets another receptor called the GIP receptor. And what we found is when we looked just in those individuals who are taking that tirzepatide class, we found another genetic variant. Mm. And this time it was right in the GIP receptor. And so again, as soon as we saw that, you're thinking, oh, we've found something that makes a lot of sense. It's again, it's in the drug target. And what's interesting here is we don't see a difference in efficacy. Mm. In general, tirzepatide is more efficacious than the semaglutide class. But what we do see is this genetic variant really modulates those side effects.
Yeah, so, I saw that. And what's even more interesting about that is, to what you just said, is that tirzepatide tends to be a little bit better tolerated kind of across the board too. But so it's interesting that that variant didn't necessarily predict the amount of weight loss, but did predict the side effects.
Huh. Yeah, and so when we thought about this a bit, we think we understand what's going on. So that GIP receptor is kind of acting as a buffer on some of those side effects. And we think what this genetic variant is doing is that it's reducing that buffering effect. And so it's almost like taking the brakes off. Mm. And so you kind of get back to getting more of those side effects.
Interesting.
And so in that case, the effect is a bit larger, right? So we think that if you're carrying both of these genetic variants in the GIP receptor and the GLP-1 receptor, your probabilities for getting side effects while on tirzepatide could be like 14-fold greater. So it can be quite significant.
So, and the variant in the GIP down like blocks the effects of GIP. Is that what you're saying?
We think that this variant reduces that effect.
That makes sense.
We've been to some of these lectures where these bench researchers are looking at GIP and the antiemetic properties, and there's a lot of debate over whether the GIP is additive or synergistic in terms of the weight loss. And because I don't know if you know about like biased agonism or anything like that.
I was going to say, because then it gets into the, you know, slightly agonizing, then blocking it. And it may be blocking it that's actually better.
So it's possible the GIP component is allowing you to get more of the GLP-1. It's a lot of interesting stuff. Okay, so tell us, because I saw a lot of the naysayers online going, oh, it's a small effect size. But like, I don't care if it's small. It's just still interesting.
If it helps to predict, because, you know, 85 to 90% of people have at least some sort of good response, maybe not optimal or excellent, but they're losing more than 5-10% of their weight. But can this help, you know, predict who may not respond much at all?
I mean, I think it's important to put these things in context, right? So genetics is part of the puzzle. So we think for the GLP-1 receptor variant, if you carry two copies of that, and there's about, I think, 5% of people carry two copies, it's going to explain about 1.5 kilos of weight loss. And that's about 10% of what you might expect on these medications. So 10% is meaningful, but it's not the whole picture, right? So there's a lot of other factors that determine how well these medications are going to work, many of which are kind of known about. So in our data, we see, for example, medications tend to work better for women as opposed to men. It tends to work less well for diabetics. It tends to work better if you stay on the medications for longer or if you're on a higher dosage. And so I think it's important when thinking about these things that we're not just considering genetics in isolation. That kind of doesn't make sense. It's important to try and integrate the information that you have, both in terms of the genetics and, say, clinical risk factors in thinking about these. And, you know, I think when you are talking to a patient, I think being able to talk through what the experience may be, like, you know, hey, look, you're carrying these genetic variants for these side effects, that can be something that helps prepare the individual for what their journey may be, right? And so they're not surprised like that further down the road.
What do you think the research is going to go to? I mean, like, this is, I mean, you guys have such a cool database. You can do a lot of things with this. Are you looking further into the stuff? Like, I don't know. I don't even know what you guys are doing, but it sounds like it's
pretty cool. Like, that'd be a lot to tell us.
Yeah, you probably got some, there's probably a lot of money involved here with big pharma and stuff like that.
But. Hey, we're a not-for-profit now. So I think the interest, there's a lot of interesting questions left in GLP-1s, right? So for example, we know that when people stop these medications, some people gain a lot of weight. Mm-hmm. Some people don't.
Yeah, so, that's what I want to know.
So yeah. there's another instance where there's variation in how people are experiencing.
Oh, that would be cool. That would be a cool study.
So is genetics contributing to that? I don't know, but that feels like a very natural follow-up.
Mine certainly is, but we got to figure out.
My prediction on that, there are very similar percentages of those who respond with diet and exercise alone. You know, when you're looking at 15% weight loss, it's, you know, about 10 to 15% of people are able to do that. And in the studies where they randomize people to a placebo, about 10 to 15% keep most of their weight off. It would be really cool
after they've already lost the weight for people listening.
It would be cool to see the if those are similar genetic predictors. I don't know.
I'm a geneticist, so I'm a little bit biased, and I will say genetics plays a role in like so many things,
like everything. Really,
I'd be amazed if genetics didn't have some
compensation. Absolutely. I mean, when I explain exactly what you're talking about, Spencer, to people, I talk about how, you know, I'm basically making the huge assumption that I assume it is the genetics that basically do that. We just don't have a way to predict it necessarily yet. That said, what are the percentages that you guys found of people with the different number of alleles for the different variants and stuff kind of across that board of 28,000 people?
Oh, I'd have to go look it up. But they're both pretty common alleles. So, you know, certainly double-digit percentages for both of them are carrying at least one copy of the variant. And what it seems to be is that the effect is additive. So if you carry two copies, then, you know, you get double the effect. So these are reasonably common genetic variants. And it is something that I think people... ideally, as we move towards a more precision medicine world, it is something that one would want to incorporate, recognizing that it's not the whole story. And so, you know, I think when there is criticism of the effect sizes more, if we're moving to a world where genetics is commonly available and you know these things are predictive, why wouldn't you want to use it, right? It's better to have more information than less.
Unrelated question, because I see doctors and all sorts of people on social media butcher the idea of heritability. Where obese, yeah, no, because they'll say obesity, it's like whatever, some percent, 50-80% heritable.
It's like 80% heritable.
Whatever it is, but it doesn't guarantee that that person is going to have obesity. It's not like...
It loads the gun and the environment pulls the trigger.
But there's people explain it incorrectly. Like, oh yeah, of course they're going to have obesity. It doesn't necessarily mean. So I'd love to just hear you explain heritability from a geneticist that would want our population of, we get doctors listening and we have researchers, but we also have regular
patients. Yeah.
Patients.
So, I mean, the way I think about this is, genetics is important, but it is not destiny.
Mm-hmm.
And we have lots of examples where you can see for people who can be at very high risk for things like diabetes, right? We have data that shows if you live an unhealthy lifestyle and you're high risk, your probability of getting diabetes is going to shoot right up. But even for people who are at high risk for diabetes, if they make healthy choices, you can essentially eliminate that genetic risk. And so I think there are, you know, there's lots of information here, but it's all about how do you manage those probabilities and how do you manage those risks. I think it's important, right? So everybody is going to be at high genetic risk for something. And if you have that knowledge, you can use that in your day-to-day life. Yeah. It's nothing is fate, but the more information you have, the more educated choices that you can make as an individual, because, you know, we're all humans. We're all trying to make decisions every day. And sometimes if you can just tip the scales a little bit, it can have a benefit over the long term.
Yeah. That's great. Can we title the podcast episode, Genetics Are Important, But It's Not Your Destiny?
Hey, that sounds good to me.
Well, that kind of gets into the concept of kind of these monogenic obesity, but like major deletions of a gene that has a very strong,
profound effect.
Versus polygenic
risk. Yeah.
That kind of plays. Okay. Yeah.
I think that's important, right? It's like, I think, you know, a long time ago before the human genome, people thought there'd be like one gene for diabetes. It'd be much more in that monogenic world. And that's just not what the data has borne out. For common diseases, generally there are hundreds or thousands of genetic variants in the genome that are all contributing to that risk. And they all have very, very small effects. But in aggregate, it can be quite meaningful.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I think that's just how it is understood in my field. And I don't know that it's always sort of made it through to the common discourse of like, the concept of like there is one gene for disease X or disease Y is kind of just not the right way to think. There's occasional situations where you get very high impact genetic variants that can work like that, but it's really the exception, not the rule.
You know, Spencer, that's probably what they misunderstand. Even the doctors who are arguing don't understand the complex polygenic nature of it, as opposed to these, you know, rare, you know, monogenic, very powerful things. I think they don't understand the nuance.
Well, I was getting at the heritability is a statistical measure, people think 80%. Well, it's like, okay, 80% of their kids are going to have obesity no matter what.
Right.
It's like,
and
no,
it's that they don't understand that. Yeah.
That's why I was asking. Yeah. Is there a simple way that you as a geneticist could explain? Cause I always have to about it to then do a video about it. There's a statistical component of it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway,
that's great.
Very cool. Thanks for coming on. We're going to share this here soon. Anybody listening to this, make sure you give 23andMe a look. Are you guys reporting this on the?
Yeah, so we do have this information in our Total Health product. So if people are interested, that we are actually able to provide this information to people. I think before I go, there's one thing I want to say is I want to emphasize that none of this research is possible without our research participants. It's entirely voluntary to participate in research of 23andMe. We're incredibly grateful to all of those that have chosen to do so. Just want to say thank you and emphasize that it's deeply appreciated.
That's
absolutely
great. Very good. Anybody listen to this kind of interest in the genetics of why some people may respond a little bit better than others and some may have side effects more than others, make sure you share this with a friend or family member. Go give us a review on iTunes or Spotify or whatever. If it's that's not as high,
love of God,
don't you dare review us. Thanks for coming on, Dr. Auden.
Thank you.
This podcast is for entertainment and education and information purposes only. Remember, the physicians on this podcast are not your physician. It should not be considered professional or personalized medical advice. It should not be used to replace speaking with your physician or medical professional to discuss your specific health concerns. The topics discussed should not be used solely to diagnose or treat any condition. As a result, we are not responsible for any unwanted medical outcomes. The views and opinions discussed are of those of the host only and do not represent those of any other entities. We'll be right back.